Blog Talk Radio.
Besides, relationships are for people that are just waiting for something better to come along.
Spoken like a cynic.
I'm not a cynic. I'm a realist.
Who are a realist masquerading as a cynic who is secretly an optimist.
Signature and Jackie, we're all sisters with different opinions, so for the next hour, we're going to talk about... Tuesday, February 4th, and once again, it's Ladies' Night at the Every Woman Talk Show. I got Uli, Jackie, and Sig on the line, and I am Nate. We are your hosts for the evening. Hello, ladies.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing, Sig? Is Sig on the line, or is it just Jackie? Okay, well, I think... Sig, is that you?
I'm here. Hello. I'm sorry.
Hey,
okay.
Sig, how are you?
I'm fine. Y'all forgive me. I just wanted to drink some water. I did not hear you guys. I apologize.
You off your running laps, huh?
No, it's raining here.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Well, I'll take that any day as opposed to what we have and what we're about to get.
You know, you know, when I lived in L.A., people, when it rained, I would always say, well, it's better than snow. But now that I'm back in New Jersey, I have nothing to say now. I just got to get my shovel and get the, you know, picking them up and putting them down. I got to get with the rest of the New Jersey folks. But, ladies, happy Black History Month.
Happy Black History Month, ladies.
Yes. How are you ladies celebrating Black History Month? Are you doing anything special?
At work, we are doing a celebration, and I am in charge of trivia. So I have had to dig out books and go online, and also, too, my son is doing the same thing, ironically, up at his school. So he and I are kind of working collaboratively to try to get some information about some prominent people and some not-so-prominent people who have given some amazing contributions towards our culture and our people. So it's been kind of interesting, you know, finding out some different facts about people. So it's going to be kind of cute doing the whole trivia thing.
Cool. What about you, Six?
I got upset because, you know, every Black History Month, and actually 3 months before, they show the same movies on TV. And don't
yes, I thought it was
damn it, I know the word.
Yeah.
And if we gotta watch The Color Purple one more time.
Oh, good Lord, that's been on every other week since October.
Yes, now, okay, I thought it was me. Now, I love The Color Purple. I know the whole dialogue, but they have been running that since, I kid you not, at least November, every single weekend.
And so, and I applaud the network, yay, big ups for you, but guess what? There's more to us than Roots, Queen, Malcolm X, and Color Purple. And
but, how would you change
to
that?
Our history. And I'm working on that. I have never written so many letters, and I thank the network for responding. And I guess people are like, first of all, is this her real name? So I guess that's what it is. But, you know, and I'm like, okay, can I get a little help here? Because there's more to us than that. And there's more to us than being able to stand on stage and shake our butt. We are not.
Oh, yes. Come on, touch on that.
There's depth to us. And so as I'm engraced with a bunch of vets lately and a bunch of women, I've decided that, you know, they think I'm a little different, and that's cool.
That's
but we're
going
to learn something every day.
Different is,
and we're
different
not going to learn about
thing.
Rosa Parks, because we know about Rosa Parks. We know her death. And we're
not
going to learn about Coretta Scott King. Big ups to her, but we know her. And Harriet Tubman, my icon, since I can remember.
I love her.
Big ups to her. We're going to bring it forward. And we're going to teach the millennials what they need to know about their current history. So my goal is to point out to them, this is what's going on right now. This is this person of color, and this is what they're doing, and they're not selling the game. They are, this, the game is their life. And you may not hear about them, and you hear all the negative stuff because I hear one more shooting, one more robbery. One more fire being set by one of us to one of our own. I'm going to kill somebody myself. There is more to us than what they're allowing to be shown. So it's my fight, not just this month, but this year, to let the world know Roots is cool. It just pisses me off.
Because there's more.
There's absolutely more. And somewhere along the line, the networks have just decided that, in all actuality, we're only going to give you the last week or two. I remember once upon a time that you would be inundated with all the movies
from
the beginning of the month to the end of the month. And then it became, okay, maybe the second week of the month, and then it was the third week. And knowing that it's the shortest month of the year, it's like, okay, we can get a week's worth of movies. And it, with the exception of The Roots, The Malcolm X, and The Color Purple, we get that all the time. But then what they'll do instead is they'll put a concert on. So then they'll put on a Beyonce concert, they'll put on an Usher concert, they'll put on a this person, and I'm like, okay, and that's a beautiful thing. But they're like, six cents,
there's so much more than that.
There are people doing things that, you know, I've reached out to some people and was like, hey, I read your story. I checked out your bio. I think you're great. And they're like, oh, you know, and they're doing it from the kindness of their heart. And I thank them for what they do and the movements and strides they're making in their community. Now I need the world to know what they do about the movements and the strides they're making in their community. It's time to tie some communities together. It's time to network us clear across the United States and wherever we are located within the world. Because, again, I love Roots, but it just makes me angry.
Yes, yes. But now, you guys, that you guys pretty much answer my question, you know, what can we do? What should we be doing different? Now, if we want to get some advice to some parents or some educators or just to, you know, people that are our generation or younger, what should we be doing differently?
Ooh, that runs the gambit. I mean, you know, I think Sig hit on an amazing point is, you know, we have our foundation, and I think we should never, ever, ever, ever forget about our foundation. But there's so much that is happening right now. And I think with this generation, they're kind of a right now generation. They want to learn about or know about things that are happening now with people that are happening now. And I think maybe some research projects or research papers should go on about people who are influential and who are doing things and changing things right now. And then that can tie into our foundation, because had it not been for our foundation, a lot of those people wouldn't be able to do what they do now.
Exactly.
I definitely agree. It was like I asked the ladies, asked women first, and then I had a, I work with two people with a unisex name, and I thought I was talking to the female, and I was talking to the male, and we got into it about I called him a woman. And he goes, if you think I'm a woman, I'm going to call you a man. We're not in the same office. We're sending messages to each other. And I was like, well, I've been told I think like a man. He's like, you got the wrong one. Where's the girl? She's there with you. I said, no, she's sitting right behind me. I thought I was talking to her all day, and it's you. But it was cool because I realized that I've been asking questions of women, and I hadn't opened up the door for men because my fight in Black History this month was to start with the women, ladies first, and then work my way around.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked them, you know, I was like, who do you feel is the influential Black women of today? And if I hear one more Oprah, one more Beyonce.
Oh, wow. Girl, get up off my soapbox.
That's all we know. That's all we know.
I said, you know, big ups to them. Oprah's done some things, and she's done too much. I think she's turning herself around and flipped inside within herself, and she may be more of a hindrance for us now than she was a help. And Beyonce, I love her. Beyonce opened her own door, though, for her. So she would be able to perform, and she does it well. And so that you, as her audience, could support her habit to make her who she is. Big ups to her. I'm not taking anything from her. She's a great performer. But what door is she open for my grandkids? I know who opened the door for me to walk through, and I'm sick of the placeholders that we have in place. Don't hold a place for me. Open the door. So I said, well, what about, I want to know who's opening the door so my granddaughter can walk through.
Exactly, right, exactly. What's being done for that reach back where it's that whole each one teach one, each one lead one. So when you get to a certain place, what are you doing to kind of reach back and take the hand of somebody else and say, okay, you know what, now this is the opportunity I've created. You walk through the door and do something else. And like you said, you're just kind of holding a space. You're not kind of doing anything to kind of reach back. And I think that's kind of where we start to fail each other, whereas, you know, it's just about, you know, it's me, and you hold an influential place, and you don't utilize it, in my opinion, to kind of bring along some other folks.
It's the little things, you know, like I sit and, you know, this must be my year to be slammed with women, but I sit around a bunch of women all day now. And so I'm sitting up there and I'm watching them. I'm a people watcher and I'm looking at them and I'm watching them chit-chat amongst themselves. And then if somebody walk away, chit-chat about the person and walk away.
I just walked away.
Yeah, so I sat there and I didn't say anything. And again, they think I'm a little different, so I accepted that. But I said, you know what, while you're talking about her, while you're saying maybe she shouldn't be dressed like that or she shouldn't carry herself like that, have that conversation with her, not about her, to someone else.
Well, it's always easier a lot of times for folks to do the observation about others and instead of doing the, you know what, let me help you out. Let me lend you a piece of advice, or let me in a constructive way, not a tear down kind of way.
And I understand that, and that's all fine and well. But like I told them, if you can muster up the energy to talk about somebody, to bring down another Black woman, you can take that same energy and have that conversation with her, especially considering the fact I'm talking, I got big wide age group differences here. You're almost 50 and she's just barely 20.
Exactly. But you know what's interesting? It's braver, it is way braver to take someone to the side and say whatever it is. It's so much easier to sit with a whole bunch of other people and talk about an individual. That doesn't take a whole lot of heart. It doesn't take a whole lot of thought. It doesn't take a whole lot of consideration.
And, you know, and I have no respect for the
None.
Person that buys into drama and want to deal with the gossip, because that's not me. And it could just be that I don't have good sense. I'm not real sure. If there's something about you, I've been trying to figure it out. If there's something about you, something that you're wearing or something that you do that I like, I'm going to break my neck to get to you to let you know that you're wearing that.
Why do we have that problem as Black women? Why do we have a problem with complimenting each other?
We have
I think that so
stuff.
If you got on the baddest pair of shoes, I'm a bag freak. So if you got a bag that I absolutely think is phenomenal, I will come tap you on your shoulder. Excuse me. I just want to let you know I love your bag. I may even ask you where you got it from, and if you don't want to tell me, I get that. But I will come to you, and I will tell you I absolutely love your bag. I love your hair. I love your shoes. And keep it moving. But a lot of other women would rather find the one thing that's wrong with you as opposed to the 99 things you got going on.
And, we have to have a show about uplifting women. And because it's Black History Month, and to all of our listeners out there, you know, I just wish that for this month, I wish for every day for the rest of our lives, but if nothing else for this month, that we would encourage one another. Men and women, when we see each other on the street, let's make eye contact and say hello. In my wildest dreams, I wish that there would be no black-on-black crime this month, that No young son or young daughter would go without seeing their parent this month. You know, I would that we wouldn't, you know, tear each other down, that we would just love each other and support each other, that there would be no unnecessary arrests, no unnecessary gang violence. Now, I know that's in my fantasy mind, but I just wish, as a tribute to our ancestors, that we would just pull our pants up from the sag this month. You know, not have our booty and you know, breasts hanging out this month. Just to say, hey, you guys, we appreciate you and where we've come from. But you guys, that was a great, like, little miniature show right there. That was awesome. But we kind of got to introduce our topic real quick and go to break. So, Jackie, do you want to tell our listeners what our topic is tonight?
Tonight we will be discussing influential Black women, influential African American women, and we're kind of going to run the gambit on past and present, because, again, I think it ties into the point I made before that, you know, we have to respect our foundation as to where we've come from, and some of the women of today that, even like Sig was saying, they don't get recognition. You don't even know about them. You don't necessarily hear about them, but there are some amazing women right now doing some amazing things, and then there are some women who are less known about that help create our foundation. And you don't hear their names. You don't know who they are. You don't know what they contributed. You know, it kind of gets overshadowed by the Rosa Parks and the Coretta Scott Kings and, you know, and the Oprah Winfreys of that nature. But there have been some women who have just decided to stand up and say, you know what, why not me? I'm going to take a step. And because I take a step, I'm going to make a way for somebody else. So that's where we're going this evening.
All righty, you heard that. So we're getting ready to go to break right now. We have a great show for you tonight, as always. We have a special guest on the Every Woman Talk Show tonight, Dr. Sandra Lewis. She is a sister of distinction herself and the director of African American Studies at Montclair State University. So please give us a call at 646-478-4507 and let us know the Black women that you think have had the most impact on Black culture since 1970. So it's February, Black History Month, and we're celebrating Black women, women of all races, all races and ethnicities at the Every Woman Talk Show. We'll be right back.
Shadow. World, radio.
Cause in my physical I can't express through song. Delete stress like Motrin, then extend strong. I drink my wet with Medusa, give a shotguns in hell. From the split that I'm lifting in hell, it ain't hard to tell.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new value.
Pump up the volume. portion from our On the Top platform.
The music is
co-host that we were missing, so, you know, we just want to welcome her into the topic tonight, but let's get right to it. We're talking about black women that have had the most impact on black culture since 1970 or no impact at all, so we'd love to hear from you tonight. Give us a call at 646-478-4507, but we have a special guest on our show tonight, Dr. Sandra Lewis. And Dr. Lewis is the director of African American Studies at Montclair State University, a clinical psychologist known for her commitment to wellness, healing, and purpose-driven living. She spent years working in the fight against HIV and AIDS, is the co-author, co-director of the conference Improving the Health Status of Black Women, Understanding Cultural Belief Systems. Dr. Lewis developed and teaches a course at Montclair State called The Black Woman. She is also the founder of The Living Source, a resource for everyday purposeful living. So please welcome Dr. Lewis to the Every Woman Talk Show.
Thank you so very much. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening. Thank you.
So, Dr. Lewis, you have a list of accomplishments, and, you know, it's an honor to have you on the show. And you've heard our topic tonight, you know, Sisters of Distinction, and we're talking about women who have had the most impact on black culture, and not just women that we know, like the Oprahs and, you know, maybe Michelle Obama and Barbara Gordon, but some of the women that maybe for our younger generation, like the Gabby Douglas or the, you know, again, the Rihannas, but some women we don't know. Like, it could be ourselves, our mothers, our grandparents. But we just want to hear from you, especially as it relates to the course that you teach the black woman. You know, tell us how you developed the course and what sisters you think have made the biggest impact on black culture.
Well, it's interesting because I think that one of the most impressive things to me about studying black women and our lived experience and our social and political impact is the fact that many times when there is social and political change, it happens because everyday black women decide there is going to be a change. Mm-hmm. I know that many of us are very familiar with Rosa Parks, and she sat on that bus and she decided, yes, you know, I'm not going to give up my seat, and so her case became one that sparked a movement. However, very few of us recognize that Rosa was a part of a group of many people in Montgomery who had decided they were going to actually desegregate the buses. And there's a woman, Joanne Gibson Robinson, who was in charge of the Women's Political Council at the time. And she actually, when the schools were desegregated, when the school desegregation law came into effect, she wrote letters and started saying, we need to desegregate the buses. So when the boycott began, it really happened because women who were domestic workers, who were living with this threat and disgrace every day, really took a stand. So I'm always most impressed by what everyday women do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably one of the most exciting things about teaching the course, is that we discover so much about what everyday black women have done just
Absolutely.
Throughout time. And that
Absolutely.
Continues to happen. I mean, there are women doing things right now, and we just don't know it because we don't get a chance to be every place all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
That's
now,
a scary statement, the everyday woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But why is it that we tend to ignore the everyday woman and we idolize the ones that we see all the time?
We are such a media-driven culture
mm-hmm.
in so many ways. I think that mm-hmm. is part of it, because what's shown to us, like either in the news, on the TV, you know, that tends to grab our attention, and sometimes we actually miss what's happening right in our own communities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes that's a part of it. And then I notice that sometimes my students, you know, we're talking and I'm introducing them to ideas, and they just don't even think about looking around their own communities. They don't even recognize that they can have an impact in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we've shifted. I think we got a little bit more comfortable because we're not as aware of some of the social issues that we need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So there's less, I think, push sometimes from young people to get to know some of these things.
Okay.
Is it possible that we just kind of are always looking for that one person to kind of stand out and kind of let them take the lead, and therefore we'll kind of then follow, as opposed to looking around in our own communities and saying, hey, you know, that lady down the street, she's really been doing some really amazing work in the
mm-hmm.
neighborhood.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that sometimes happens too. I don't know that there's any one answer to that question. There are probably multiple factors, you know, that contribute to it. And part of it, I think, is also that we don't really grow up anymore sort of thinking about what our contribution to the world is around us. We grow up
mm-hmm.
thinking about what kind of job can we get and how much money can we make
doing
it.
Money am I going to make?
How are we going to survive?
Right? So we get sort of kind of lulled into this and sort of courted into a more of a careerism approach to our lives,
kind of
rather than this idea
situation.
That, yeah, we can have a career, but our career can also be something that makes a difference in the world.
In the world.
So
right.
That's actually one of the things I like about teaching this course, because it's very much connected to the Black Studies movement and the development of Black Studies, which came because students said they wanted a different curriculum, that the curriculum was not going to help them build better communities the way it was presented in universities. And so they protested for Black Studies to be developed, and that's how it came about.
And we definitely need that for sure. And
we for
and
sure.
For the parents that might be listening, and you have kids, you it would be awesome if you allowed your kids to listen into the show so that, you know, maybe they're going to find out about some black people or black women that they've never heard about. And so this is, you know, education outside of school. So we would love if you have your kids tune in and listen. But Dr. Lewis, maybe you can tell us about some women that we don't necessarily read about all the time in our history books, like the Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth. There have to be some other women today and, you know, maybe a few years back that have contributed, definitely made an impact on our
right.
culture that we just don't hear about on a regular basis.
Or that we don't talk about. It's interesting when you ask me this, one of the first things I share with my students is a quote from a woman by the name of Margaret B. Wilkerson. She was a professor at UC Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And she pulled together an edited volume, a volume of 9 plays by black women, and it was published in 1986. But in the beginning of this book, she writes this statement. Black women are a prism through which the searing rays of race, class, and sex are first focused and then refracted. The creative among us transform these rays into a spectrum of brilliant colors, a rainbow which illuminates the experience of all mankind. And what I hear her saying is that when we examine black women's lives and the way in which black women are able to negotiate multiple forms of oppression, it is not only informative to and not only helps us understand black women's experiences, but it can also illuminate for all human beings the way in which we negotiate the challenges that we face in our day-to-day life. So black women's lives are both instructive and inspiring. And I am always grateful to Margaret Wilson, and there are other people who have said this, but I just love the way that she put it, that she makes this statement that when you black women's lives are deserving of study, not only because they add to our knowledge of history, but because they are also instructive and inspiring to all human beings. So Margaret Wilkerson has become one of my favorite people to talk with my students about. I think the other person that came to mind when I first got your invitation was someone that many people know, but my students who are from New Jersey often don't recognize a stand that she took in New Jersey. That's Fannie Lou Hamer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love her.
Yes, yes, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. Isn't she? I mean, she was just one of the most wonderful women. Who was just full of vision.
Commitment.
I tell my students right now, I vote. I say if somebody says we are going to vote to decide whether or not we should change the color of the crosswalks to purple from white, I'm going to vote because of Fannie Lou Hamer.
Yes.
But I think what they don't realize is that she was a part of a group and helped to form a group called the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which in 1964 actually took a stand at the Democratic Convention in Atlantic City, New Jersey, because the Democratic Convention, even though she and many people had been registering blacks to vote in the South and were really positioning to support the Democratic Party in that presidential election, they were going to seat an all-white delegation in Atlantic City. And so Fannie Lou Hamer was among the people who helped to organize this protest at the Democratic Party. And if you look at the pictures from that 1964 convention, you will just see a sea of white men and women. And this Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party actually protested, and Fannie Lou Hamer got an opportunity to speak on the delegation floor. And it was after that. Many people credit Hubert Humphrey for making a change, helping to create change in the Democratic Party. But without Fannie Lou Hamer, right, the party that we saw in 2008 that nominated Barack Obama would not have existed. I mean, she really pushed
exactly.
that.
She was amazing.
She was amazing.
I love her. I was reading her bio, and mm-hmm. because I'm helping my son do the trivia, and I love what she said to the owner of the plantation when she was going to vote, and he said, "Fannie, we're not ready for that in Mississippi." And she said, "Well, I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for me."
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I loved that. Was so striking to me about her. She was like, "This is not about you and what you want, what you need, what you feel comfortable with. This is about what I need to do for me."
Right.
And she went on ahead, and she went and she registered to vote, and after she was beaten and hit over the head by a cop the whole nine, she still kept going. Love her.
She was beaten so badly. It's almost unbelievable to think about everything that she went through.
And a lot of people don't know who she is.
I think her impact, we see today, right, we see that, you know, as a country, America has twice elected a black man to presidency, but we don't think about how this woman played a role in making sure that Democratic Party was integrated. She and Shirley Chisholm, for that matter, because Shirley Chisholm would have been the first African-American woman to actually run for the Democratic nomination in 1972.
There are so many women that we don't know about, and like Signature said, during Black History Month, you see Roots, and you see Queen, and you some other movie that you see. Because you are a professor at Montclair State University, if you have an opportunity to switch up the way in which we educate and celebrate Black History Month, what would you do?
I think one of the things that I encourage my students to do is to make it a part of their everyday lives. When I teach my course, and when we, and many of us, when we teach our Black Studies courses, we will ask students things, you know, like we can ask them to tell us something about what Romans contributed to the world, what Greeks contributed, you know, and I can say, and I say to them, so if I were to ask you, what did African people contribute to world and human history? They look at me and they say, I can't tell you anything, Dr. Lewis. And I say that's because we don't integrate this into our everyday lives.
That's
studying
what
history
taught
and,
us, right.
Right. And being able to understand and hear the voices of a range of cultures and people is something that we have to be a part of every day. That is why in New Jersey, you know, there is now this Amistad legislation, because so much of American history is taught without making reference to the contributions of people of African descent. But it has to be a part of your everyday thinking, right? So at the same time, you know, you think about maybe some creation story, or you think about some civilization, some great civilization in Europe, you would also think about a great civilization in Africa. You know, you might think about Timbuktu and think about the great libraries of Timbuktu that still exist. Or you might think about Mali and the Dogon people who had maps of the stars before they even had telescopes.
Yes.
So it has to be a part of your everyday existence that, you know, and if we teach it that way, then children will think of, you know, African, American, African history, African historical facts and ways of being as easily as they think about anything else.
Right.
And then also, too, it's like they have to understand that it's relevant, it's important, and, you know, this helps to make up who we are, and you need to know where we come from.
I think that's true, too, and I also think it's important for all children because some years ago, one of my my nephews was, he was about 8 or 9 at the time, and he had like a social studies book from his school, which was a private school. And the school was a Christian school, so they had a kind of Christian-oriented social studies book. And in this book, it talked about this wonderful woman, I forgot her name, she was maybe an Irish or a Scottish woman who traveled to Africa, and she saved the people because the people were cannibals. And, you know,
wow.
She helped them become Christian people.
Wow.
And, yeah, so imagine that, right? And he's like, I think he may have been one of 2 brown children in the classroom. So imagine that what everybody in class is reading is that this wonderful white woman goes and she saves the Black people who are cannibals.
Humanity.
So when you look around the room, all the white children see that they come from a history of people who have helped other people. But they look at the Black children and they say, you come from a history of people
who eat people. Anything.
Savages.
Right? You're worthy of anything.
Savages, right? So
right.
If I look at you as a savage, then I don't really think there's much that you have to offer in the world.
And
now, if I can change the world if I can change every child's perspective so that they can look and say, well, all of us have some negative and some positive to our past. If that, they can look at you and say, oh, your people contributed that to world history? Wow. Even when you do not so well, somebody will look at you and say, but I know you can do better.
You come from good stock. That's right.
Right, because you come from good stock. Just like your mama would say, who are their people?
That's right.
Right? Your mama would say, well, who are their people?
Who are their people?
Right?
Right.
So it's the
it's
same
so
idea.
That
so
we don't
every child needs to understand that because, and every person needs to understand that history because we then change the playing field, right? We change the way that human beings relate to each other because then we understand that we all have made a contribution, right, to human and world history.
And what's so sad is that we don't get that option until we go off to college and then electively take a class where we can get this kind of history taught to us, that it's not given to us on an elementary, middle, and high school level.
See, that's the Amistad legislation in New Jersey, right? That's what the Amistad Commission, which I've been on for a few years, has really been working to help change. And, you know, there are more resources available to K-12 teachers now. And the commission is really working hard to give teachers the support they need to implement and school districts the support they need to implement. But, you know, it's a slow process.
Oh, absolutely, because now you're trying to change what has always been. And a lot of people don't like change. They'll stick to what they know. It makes it easier. Now we have to change the entire curriculum just to incorporate this one piece. But this one piece is very important.
Very.
But, you know, it's a, Dr. Lewis, you just mentioned the Amistad legislation. Why? I don't know if everybody else knows about that, but I didn't know about that. So why isn't – that's not even widely publicized. Now, I could be wrong, but to my knowledge, that's not out there. Not everybody knows about that. So, it's almost like, you know, we don't know because it's not taught. Our history is not taught, but even legislation like that is not widely put out there. You see more Beyonce and more of all that tiring type of stuff than efforts to actually educate us about our history.
That's interesting because just this past weekend we had a conference about the implementation of Amistad, and one of the suggestions was to do more public relations around the legislation and even to do more education. You know how when you're in a job and you have to take these little quizzes about information you need to know for your job, like sexual harassment information or that kind of thing? And one of the suggestions was actually to provide that kind of education for educators across the state, so like a little sort of test where they go in, they learn about it, and then they take a little test so they know about the legislation. But the public relations piece is something that people are talking about now, trying to figure out how to make it more widely known just among the general public. Some districts are doing well. Some districts have people who are very much dedicated to the process and helping to infuse the legislation into their curriculum. And the standards, actually the social studies standards, one of the first things the commission did was to integrate the African-American heritage piece into the social studies standards. So it exists, there's been work on numerous levels, but the work continues. It's an ongoing job.
It's an ongoing job. Okay. We have a caller on the line, Jamisha from Pennsylvania, and she has a question for you, Dr. Lewis.
Okay.
Hi, good evening, ladies. Good evening, Dr. Lewis. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
Good. I'm very much enjoying you being there and listening because it's never too late to learn certain things, and I've been enlightened with just some of the conversation you guys have had tonight. My question to you is, now, I'm a mother of three. I have three girls, and so this hits home, which is great. But you know, I must say, it's sometimes difficult because children nowadays, you know, there's so much in the media and different things that they're into. Now, my girls, thank God, they're good girls, they're straight-A students and all of that. But just what would be your suggestion? I mean, outside a library and the internet and, you know, just talking on one-on-one with your kids, my kids seem to, they hold interest in something that I can speak of where, like, I have a 14-year-old. If I can, you know, get more information on, say, Black history women that maybe were in their teens or, you know, I don't have a lot of information or resources in reference to that. See, that is more her speed where if I can say, hey, you know, there was a young girl, she was your age, and this is what she did, and she can kind of relate that way. So,
right.
I mean, I know there's some, but, you know, sometimes I got to be honest, just as kids, they get bored. I mean, I don't care how smart
and
your kid is. I got sharp kids. I mean, but you have to let them relate on their level sometimes and let them see that there are kids that contribute as well.
I'm glad you asked that question because one of the organizations I work with is an organization called Grassroots Community Foundation. And the goal of Grassroots Community Foundation is to create a world where all girls grow up to be healthy women.
Okay.
It was co-founded by my very good friend, Dr. Janice Johnson-Dias, and an old and dear friend of hers, Black Thought, who is the lead MC of the Grammy Award-winning Roots. Each summer, Grassroots has what we call Super Camp. And during Super Camp, we've been so far really focusing on African-American girls because we recognize the assault on us begins very young.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to shore their identity and also help them with literacy. So. Part of what the kids do is they have to – I teach a program with them that I call I Know Me Yoga. It's a combination of yoga and personal development. And Dr. Johnson has developed this idea of really focusing on kids' identity but using their own family history to help them learn more about who they are. So the girls have to research their families. They have to learn about people in their family, things that they've done. And then they – in I Know Me Yoga, they develop a mantra. So we actually search and help them find an African-American woman, a woman of African descent, to study that is related to the mantra that they develop.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
and
so
we have a month of intensity
with them. So one of the things to do is just to start with your own family.
Right.
With you know,
family
get to know your so much of what I know right now, I know from just sitting and talking to my grandmother, my great-grandmother.
Right.
I happened
right.
today to come across a picture of me sitting on my great-uncle's porch laughing with my grandmother.
Right, right, right. Okay, that kind of stuff, yeah, we definitely just kind of digging deeper. I mean, you know, maybe even doing a family tree and,
yes.
and digging deep
yes.
into the ancestors and things like that. I mean, you're,
yes.
that's absolutely right. You're right. I mean, we sit and talk to grandma and this and that, but like you said, just digging deeper. And that itself will show interest because, you know, they want to know where they come from. But I solely just enjoy, you know, what it is that you're doing for black women and just, you know, in life. Enlightening and teaching us all, and I think your students are blessed to have you.
Thank
you. You know, and I appreciate the information and the time tonight, and I'll continue to listen. So you ladies, just keep up the good work. It sounds great.
Thank you,
caller. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Wow, that was great information. Also, for the caller, if you're still listening, you might want to start with ancestry.com. Just to
mm-hmm.
find out where you come from. I actually, my mom and my four siblings, we did Ancestry.com, and she gave that to us as a gift. And it is so wonderful to be able to pinpoint, I come from here. Like mine was 82% West African, and the other 8% was just mixed. And it's just nice to know, to identify with, oh, okay, this is where I come from on the map. So that would be a great lesson, because how do you go forward unless you know where you came from?
Right.
Absolutely. Last summer, I had the joy of going with my mom to North Carolina and sitting and talking with a great aunt who is 87
mm-hmm.
and just kind of, you know, talking with them and digging out old pictures, like old black and whites that they have, and her memory is still so sharp. So she was able to give us a lot of the family's history. So I recorded most of the conversation, and I noticed that a lot of what was said was always around a strong woman in the family. You know, great-grandmother did this, and this aunt did that, and it was all about a lot of the women in the family, because we kind of hold the fabric of family together.
Yes, yes.
Definitely.
When you begin to study black women's history, one of the things people talk about is how throughout history, and so many people mention it, throughout history, black women have taken such, you know, an active role in creating change, building communities, sustaining communities. And it's just every day. It's just a part of who we are and what we do. It's like you wake up and you think something needs to happen in the community and you just do it. So that is so very true, everyday women.
Now, I have a question. You know, what are we doing differently today, or better yet, what are we not doing today that maybe our grandparents did as far as educating the family about black history? Because a lot of our kids, our first exposure to it really is the textbook at school, and we all know that that's not any exposure at all until the month of February, and it's Dr. King and Harriet Tubman. But what are some things that maybe we need to switch up in the home? Do we need to sit down and maybe have a history night or a social studies night, or do we post
pictures? How
about pictures?
Just a family night at all, Matei? The problem is we aren't family anymore.
Amen.
The TVs are educating
mm-hmm.
our children. The games are educating
right.
our children. The cell phones are educating our children. That's what
mm-hmm.
we're doing wrong. What we're doing
right.
is letting the media and everybody else raise our children. We aren't sitting down with our children. And when we say the classroom has to teach it, no, it has to come from home first. So
we
take
are
a
our
book
children's
and read.
First teachers.
Absolutely. So we take a book and read, and we pass that knowledge on, and they're going to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children. Whatever else they learn in the mix of all that, wonderful, great. But if we don't know it, they'll never know it.
I think, you know, we can't let our education just be in the school setting. I
absolutely
agree that parents and families have to educate at home.
My dad had maybe a 10th grade education,
mm-hmm.
but my father was so passionate about education for all of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was an avid reader, and it was – we had those nights where we had
uh-huh.
the history nights, and even though we talk about Roots, but I remember when Roots first came on, we were allowed to stay up past our bedtime because my father thought it was so important for us to watch it. And then, you know, we had to, at home, we had to write a paper. And so, you know, but these were the things that we had. Now, because I had it at home, I did it with my children. So with my kids, it's like, you know, we have the education at home. We have the books. We have the this. You have to give me a paper. You have to do the research. And they get a little bit more than what they were getting in school.
You know, but I remember, now, Jackie, as kids, I remember the first set of books coming to most black homes, the set of encyclopedias.
Yep. Oh, my gosh.
Everybody had a set of encyclopedias. What? You don't have a set of encyclopedias? What? Y'all stupid. So, and maybe it wasn't educational for all of us, but that was something that our parents were starting for us, something that we do not do today. We don't do it today.
So, therefore, we don't have that opportunity to learn about some of the women and just people, period, who have made an impact on our culture. I think what has happened now is we are a what we see kind of culture. So whoever is in front of us taking up the most time, taking up the most viewing space is who
I think
we
it's,
need
I think
as
it's
important.
Not what we see, but who can do more for us. Whatever we can get out of them, that's who we tend to fall closer to. If we can get more out of that person, whether they be black or white, that's where you're going to lean. It's never – there's no unity with us anymore.
The thing, did you want to jump in? Did you have a point, Sid?
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
the thing is, when it comes to the black culture, what we're missing, what we lack, what I remember growing up as a child was the storytelling. We as blacks, we are great storytellers. And
it's how we have kept our history.
Yeah, and so, and that's why when people, when they came out with Ancestry.com, my son was like, last year, my mom would go on Ancestry.com. I said, and what is it about your family that you don't know yet? Because, you know, we, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, they told the stories. It was important to my grandfather and my grandmother that you know where you came from, especially in my family. My family is so diverse as far as its ethnicity. So we had to know where we came from. We had to know why we looked the way we did and why things were the way they were. And so we were great storytellers. So that passed on, and we keep passing it on. And it's very important to me that my kids tell my grandkids and that it keeps going. They can do Ancestry.com, but like I tell my son, go ahead. I'll pay for it. I challenge you to find something that you don't already know. And if you do, I'm good. We can learn something together. Another thing that we do in our family is we have no technology weekends.
Nice.
Anybody in the family can declare a no technology weekend. That means you have to, there's no cell phone, there's no internet, no nothing. You get 30 minutes the whole weekend to do, use a phone or get on the internet or whatever. But we play board games. We talk. Everything is about it in our family, and this is where my parents were. You can ask any question you want, but you better have done your research on it so you can engage in a conversation about it. Don't ask for, to gain knowledge. You have to bring it as a topic. And that's where we've got to the point where kids ask the question, you ramble off the answer, and you just keep it moving. The kid has not learned anything. Their minds are not being challenged at home. Therefore, they go to school and expect for everything to be by rote, and they expect to just everything to be given to them, and they have not developed their critical thinking. They have not learned how to analyze. They have not learned to explore and think for self. And as black people, that is something, that is a gift that we have. It's engraved in our soul, and that's, it's important that we pass that along.
Think about all the things you just said, though, right? Some of the things you said that people may not think are obvious. One is that when you do this as a family, you are now engaging in a relationship, right? So the information that you share becomes more meaningful because it comes through this kind of caring and this kind of bonding and this family engagement, right? So you build a bond, and then your children actually will put even more trust into it because of the bond that you build with them. One of the things that you said that reminds me of something my mother says all the time is that she says we're too dependent on computers. We're too dependent on things that make us separate and that cause us not to have a relationship with each other.
Absolutely.
So she, you know, has now, she sets up these little game time, what she calls game time, where she brings together seniors just to sit around and play board games with each other. When I go home to Atlanta to visit, I guarantee you at some point she and my brother and I are going to sit down and we're going to play a game and we're going to sit and we're going to do something together just as a family, right? So that bonding and the way in which you share information is very important. That's actually how my spiritual development happened. It was because we shared in it together. There was a real sort of paying attention to, well, who are you and how does God come through you and how do you get to know God and yourself? So the same thing has to occur around our children getting to know their identity, right, how their identity connects through historical time.
Once upon a time, that was all we had. We didn't have all of the things that we have now. So the family connective, you know, that whole connectiveness with the family and that whole unity was always there because you spent so much time with each other. You had to engage each other. I went out to dinner with my boys on Saturday, and we were laughing and joking, and I watched another family where they're sitting there having dinner together, but every single person has their phone out, and they are on their phones texting, playing games, or whatever. What's the sense in having family dinner or family time together if you're not going to engage each other in conversation and strength, like you said, strengthen the bonds of family? And in our culture, that was our biggest thing was family. We, no matter what our struggles were, no matter what we were progressing through, we always had family, and there was always that connectiveness, and then it would expel out into the community where that whole it takes a village to raise a child.
Exactly, and that's exactly the thought I was having, is that we don't have strong communities if we don't have strong families.
Exactly.
So we must build strong families in order to build strong communities. When I grew up, if somebody was, if you were outside, like my brother fell off his bike, we didn't know he'd fallen off his bike, but somebody actually picked my brother up and carried him home. And so then my mother took him to the hospital.
Or the same would be if you got in trouble, you would get in trouble by the neighbor first, and then you're going to get in trouble by your mother.
Yeah, you got beat by your mother down the street, and then you got beat for embarrassing your mother while she was around.
But that was when it was important to be family.
It takes a village to raise a child because, you know, I tell anybody, my kids are grown except for one, and he's only 2 years away. I tell anybody, if you catch one of my kids doing something,
But you know what we have, what we fail to realize too is that the parents are becoming younger and younger and younger.
But you know what? I had a conversation with somebody about that, and I don't think it's age, because I think that I look back, like within my own family and within people I know, we as a culture, we married early, we had children early, we did a lot early. I think what happened was is somewhere along the line that connectivity is gone, because even if you were 15, 16, 17, and you had a baby and you were married or whatever the case may be, there
that's
was somebody who stepped into that and said, you know what, you don't know what you're doing, let me help you. So there was a big mama, there was an auntie, there was an older cousin who stepped in and helped to shape you,
Because you had to depend on them. You needed them in order to survive. You know that you had that child and you did not know what you were doing, and that was the order of things and the way it was done. And society has made it so they don't need anybody because they can go get on welfare and they can get vaccinated. And I'm grown. I got my own.
And as a 16-year-old, they have the right to do whatever they want to do.
And therefore, that whole connection is lost now. And that's why I say I think the whole tapestry of our culture and families is just falling apart.
I think one of the books that I share with my students is a book written by Sabone Fuso-May, and it's called The Spirit of Intimacy. And it's a West African perspective on the idea of intimacy, the idea of community. And, you know, they talk very much about how it is that you cultivate this sort of understanding of being a part of a community, being your own self with a unique purpose, but also understanding how you fit within the community and how the community supports you. I read that, and I read it for the concepts, but I also recognize that in the world that we live in, right, not being in a lovely little insulated West African village, we have to find other ways of helping children and helping families develop those same kinds of ideas and concepts. So how is it, you know, so for example, you know, there's a couple who's married, but in an African tradition, you know, a married couple is not just married because, you know, they're married and they like doing their own little thing. They're considered to be a part of the fabric of the community. So if they are in trouble, the whole community is actually coming to help them, right?
It's like the family marry the family.
Right. So we have to sort of think about, so how do we build, how do we begin to build those kinds of structures? I lived in a community where everybody knew everybody. My family had been in that community for like three generations.
Wow.
So now people live in places where they're not close to their parents or they're not close to anyone. So what do you do? I remember one of my closest friends at Montclair State, when I first met her, she'd lost her husband, and she really didn't have any family near here, and she had a very young child. So what did I do? Once a week, I went, and we had bath time so she could have time by herself. And so now, you know, I've grown – this child, you know, is my nephew. We've grown to be family. So
right.
We have to determine, you know, we have to think about how do we make this look in these days when things are different, when people don't live in as close communities as they used to. How do we build community? And even sometimes, how do we use this technology to build community? You know, sometimes a good Skype session might actually work for somebody.
But see, that's part of the problem. Before, it was I'm my brother's keeper. You're going to look out for your neighbor. You had an elderly neighbor who couldn't get out as much. Everybody in the neighborhood stopped by to see if she wanted something or needed something from the store. You know, we did that. And now people will walk past you, see you need help, and keep walking. And the thing is, we as people, it takes one at a time. We need to dial back and go back to getting to know our neighbors, because we might not live near family. We need to take the time to extend that hand and don't worry, stop worrying about everybody getting in your business. Well, you're on Facebook posting all your business, boo, so everybody's business anyway. So, I mean,
that's a whole other show.
Yes, that's a different show. Yes.
I know. That's what it is, and that's what it boils down to. And, you know, I tell people all the time, I can help you. I'm willing to help you, and guess what you don't have to do? I don't need the details. Your story is your story, and everybody's had a struggle, and everybody's been down or will be down. And even if you were down and got up, you may be down again. So I don't need your details. What do you need me to do to help you so that you go forward? And this is not something that you wallow in and that you're stuck, a point that you're stuck at. And I think that's what it is. People need to get off of all the what happened. Well, you shouldn't have did this, you shouldn't have that. Number one, don't preach at me, because your life is no better than the man behind you, and definitely no better than mine. Number two, come at me on my level. Reach out and genuinely want to help me. I'm not the next gossip story at the water cooler on Facebook or anywhere else. If you help me, you help me from your heart. Because if I do something for you from my heart, which is the only way I can do anything, that's between me, you, and God. And it's a wrap.
Yeah, and that's also a part of cultivating that idea of community, right? So if somebody needs something, you do it because you can. We often talk about this idea, you know, I talk with my friends. Sometimes I don't even know, like a friend of mine might have a friend and I meet that person and they need something. But I give it to that person because I can, right? I have it. I know something that can help them, so I share it with them. So this idea of community is not even just based on the fact that, you know, I'm close to you or that I know you, but because I see you and I can help you. You know, in the South, you grow up, when you walk into a room, everybody speaks to you. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter if they know you or not.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I first moved to New Jersey, I was like, people close doors in your face. They don't speak to you when you walk in a room.
I
had a complete
opposite
culture shock for me.
I moved to Tennessee,
right?
And when I moved to Tennessee, everybody said, good morning. And I'm looking at them like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah,
why are you
talking
to me?
What's
because
wrong with you? Why are you talking? You trying to get in
my
business? What's wrong,
here?
Right?
And
so
then when I came back to New Jersey, it was like, I was like, good morning. People looking at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm from Chicago, so you definitely, you know, Jersey, Chicago, you keep New York, you just keep it moving. You go about your day. So I had to come to the South, and I was looking at people like, what the hell is wrong with y'all? Why
are
everybody all in each other's face?
Why
and
am
I got
so nice?
The good morning thing, and no. Everybody's not nice. Most of them just nosy. Because I got past the good morning thing, and then it was Monday morning, and this girl goes, good morning. I was like, good morning. She said, how was your weekend? It was great. What did you do? Oh, I just, you know, relax. That's what I always say, I relax. She goes, no, what did you do? And I went back home on her. I turned around on my heels. I said, well, let me see. I went to bed Friday night about 2 o'clock in the morning. I gave her blow by blow. I felt like that's what she wanted. And then she goes, I didn't mean it like that. I said, well, you were kind of being nosy. You asked me how was my weekend. I said, it was okay. And I said, I'm just this. Y'all are real chatty. I'm not that chatty. And it's a geographical thing. I'll give you that.
Most definitely.
Because
and I actually miss it. I miss it.
And you know what? I don't. I really don't. And you know what else? You know what else the people in the South do? And I hope everybody's listening. This is really my soapbox. I've sat back and watched them say, oh, excuse me, do you know what so-and-so is? And they send these people on these long journeys and don't go past the green mailbox and two steps to the right of that red house. That means you went too far. And I'm looking at them like, oh, that's wrong, baby. It's right there. Now, up north, and this guy had to attest to it. I said, up north, you know what I would do? If you stopped me on the subway somewhere and you asked me where something was, I'm going to take you there. I don't want you to get lost in my city. You may think we're mean. We're going to take care of you. Once you get our attention, we just don't
see them. I'm not. No, look, 3 blocks down the street, make a left. Good luck with that.
No. You know what, ladies? You know what I'm hearing?
It's a whole different
you ain't,
bag
first of all,
here.
Off this way, Jackie. You ain't even stopping for nobody. What you talking about?
Exactly. I'm like, people honk at
you're
me,
like,
and they'll be like,
you
excuse me. No.
No.
You know what I'm hearing?
Me. You want to carjack me, steal my kid? No, we're not stopping for y'all.
But that's part of the issue of alienating now in communities, because it kind of brings it full circle, because there's so much happening now. And a lot of times you don't necessarily feel comfortable integrating with the people in your community.
Well, when you guys say it takes a village to raise a child or children, it's very difficult to do that when you are afraid of the children that you're trying to raise.
You know what, that's an excellent point.
I am so not afraid of them. I am not that person that's going to walk down the street and see that pack of people that see me out of their urban dress they're going to be gang members. I'm going to walk right where I'm going. And I'm going to say,
like
make it long and make it wide. And it's kids. If you're younger than me, you're a kid. I don't care if you're a year younger than me, you're a kid to be. I'm going to stop and have a conversation with you.
What I'm saying to you is you have these young women and young boys today that at one time, if you saw an older woman, and I mean you would step to the side, or you would not sit there and be cursing and you would, oh, excuse me, you don't get that anymore. Now, you cannot turn around and tell these young kids today, do you see this older woman sitting here, or this older man sitting here, or even on the bus, you got to tell, you don't even want to tell them to get up and let an older person sit. The children.
I have those.
You're not from here, like I said. You ain't from the hood. So if you were from the hood up here, you would not. These kids are carrying guns, knives, and don't care about you or the next person that says something to them. So if you want
to
be tough and do it, knock yourself out, like I said, the village is no longer the village anymore.
I want to shift because we're almost out of time, but I just want to shift it a little bit. And Dr. Lewis, I'm going to start with you on this question, and then I want everybody's opinion. We have all heard recently that Rutgers University has established this course, Politicizing Beyonce. And I just want to know, Dr. Lewis, what's your input on that? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it something we need? Should we be politicizing someone else instead of Beyonce? And then, ladies, I want you to chime in as well.
You know, I read a little bit about this a while ago, this course on Beyonce, and I don't remember all the details about it. Can you remind me of what the focus is, what they intend to do with this course?
Well, it's basically there's an analysis of her lyrics and the videos with readings from Black feminists. That's
okay.
All I know about it.
So the idea is to suggest that her music can contribute to our thinking about feminism, or a perspective on feminism, or her perspective on feminism. I think to design a course around a person, but I would actually design a course around a concept. And if there was some way that you wanted to work that particular person's perspective or ideas into the course, I would suggest, I would do it that way. Because there are so many women who have contributed to our thinking about women's issues, and there are so many ways to come at that. One of my friends has told me that there are courses on Tupac and Biggie, which I had no idea about. It's not a direction that I would take as a, in terms of a course, but I understand, right, why people go that way. I would go more conceptual, and I might include that person and their lyrics as part of it. So, for example, in my class, I use a book called Words of Fire by Beverly Gashefto, and she has collected black women's writings dating back to, like, the early 1800s. And at a time when people didn't even think black women were writing. And her position is that this was her way of beginning to capture black women's contributions to feminist thought across time. So she has a range of things in this book. And, of course, you know, there are people like Patricia Hill Collins who have written a lot about a black feminist perspective. There are just numerous people. The first book All the Women Are White, All the Blacks Are Men, But Some of Us Are Brave. It was the first black women's studies text. So there are just so many pieces of information across history if we were going to talk about what we might call feminist perspectives that I probably would not choose to do it that way. I just feel like you could have a richer discussion with there are so many other ways to contribute to that.
Good point. Stig, what about you? What do you think?
Okay, I just looked this up because all of us didn't know about this. I just don't care about Beyonce like that, for real, for real. They said that there's a guy named Kevin Onred who's teaching the class, and he said he's using the singer's career to explore American race during sexual politics. Okay, the class includes analysis of Beyonce's videos and lyrics as well as readings from black feminists. Black feminists, I got a problem with that one. I think it's BS. But keep in mind, there's a course on her husband. There's a course on Bruce Springsteen. At different universities, this is the thing to do, and I guess this is their way of reaching a younger generation and saying, I understand your music and your world.
Wow, okay.
I wouldn't take the course, and I think I'd beat one of my kids if they took it.
Yeah, I don't think I would take that either.
I'm not interested.
Uli, what do you think about the course?
I just think they're making her too relevant in our lives. Like, I mean, let her sing, let her make her money, whatever, but to introduce her into a college setting is ridiculous. She don't need to put this girl probably even get 1 week of college in. So to make her that relevant in our lives, I think is ridiculous. Her words have nothing to do with what we are struggling with. And who cares about her love life? All of us have our own problems with our love life, and she is no one to be dictating anything to anybody. I think it's ridiculous.
Okay, and Jackie, what do you think?
I'm trying to get this look off my face because I don't understand. I don't understand. And maybe, like Sig said, it is something to reach a right now generation, you know, and hopefully it'll take some other turn someplace else. But from whatever I've heard of her, and I'm not a huge fan, but if she's on the radio, I'll leave it on. But I haven't heard anything that has been in her lyrics that have been so profound.
Thank you.
That makes me go, damn, really?
Now, don't get me wrong. I love Beyonce. I think she is a performer of a performer. I will give her
I've seen her twice.
As
she's
a
amazing.
Performer myself,
not because of choice. But
as a musician myself, I will give her ups on all of that. But that is where it ends.
I don't understand. Like I said, I don't understand where in any of her lyrics that she said something that has just, you know, changed the course of anything. You know,
she's
I mean.
Not doing.
If you know, if you like it, then put a ring on it. I mean, okay, so now maybe you telling young women to say, you know what, you want to date me or you want to be with me, you want to get everything, okay, you got to marry me or be committed to me. Okay, maybe. But again, that's the things that we should be telling our young women anyway. You know, but as you're telling your a young woman that you got on a one-piece bodysuit and you're shaking your butt. So I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't see where I would design an entire class around her as an individual. Okay. She has just become so in your face that it's become nauseating. Like, you know, I want to turn on the TV and not hear about her some days. I want to hear about some other young up-and-coming individual who can sing, who can dance, who can write their own music, who's charitable, who has an amazing charity that they're giving back to. And those are the things that, you know, used to get from our entertainers and when they were listed as icons, you know, it was more than just, you know, you got a perfume, you got a clothing line, and you can sing. And you
right.
Can, there's more. There's got to be someone else of substance that they can design a class around. Now, if it's a marketing class, I get it. Because she's a marketing machine.
Absolutely.
She is a marketing machine.
Absolutely.
If it's about how to make money, then I get it. But other
right.
than that, I don't understand.
Well, on that note, we have politicized Beyonce right here. So you don't really need to take the class at Rutgers. You just need to get tuned into this show.
But and I will send you all a degree.
It's time for closing thoughts. So, Dr. Lourdes, we're going to start with you. We just want some closing thoughts on, you know, women that have made the most impact, what you think, anything that you want to sum up of Black History Month.
Yeah, I think that we want to pay attention every day to the everyday women in our lives. Right now, I look around, and there's like this, sometimes people talk about this kind of natural hair movement, and we sometimes forget that the women of the 1970s of the Black Power Conscious and Black Panther Party who really began to say that we can expand our standard of beauty. We forget about little women like Joanne Little, who in the 1970s was arrested because she killed a guard who forced her into oral sex, and her case became a national case. And in fact, after she was acquitted of murder, the outlaw statute in the state of North Carolina was struck down. So I think I want to just remind us to think about the everyday women in our lives and to start with our own families, to really pay attention to the ways in which our mothers and grandmothers have taught us about how to be the best person we can be in the world.
You know, you guys, I just think that, you know, sometimes it becomes about teaching, you know, and sometimes we have to kind of take up the torch and do some outreach, even though it may be hard, so that we can.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, I think
Hello?
We got disconnected.
Are
Hello?
We? Are we still?
I think we're all here now.
Okay, I'm sorry. Who was speaking last?
Jackie.
Go ahead, Jackie. Continue. Or did Jackie get it? Sig, are you online?
Yeah.
Okay, and did you give your closing thoughts? I'm not sure.
No.
No. Okay, Jackie, are you there? Sorry.
What happened with Jackie?
Okay, all right. Well, Jack, we lost Jackie for a second. But, Sig, if you want to go ahead and jump in and give your closing thoughts.
Okay. In my travels this weekend and talking to people about the influence of Black women, I have a very good friend, and I asked him if I could quote him. He never said yes or no. I'm going to quote him anyway. I love what he said when I asked the question. His name is Mark Jones. He lives in Atlanta. Yeah, I'm telling it. Okay. Mark said, when I said, Mark, tell me who you think the most influential Black woman is of today. And he goes, there is no way to answer that question. To be an influence requires true work and sacrifice at the grassroots level. True soldiers, not someone who talks a good game, but they are the game. Their names will never be great, but their work will echo throughout eternity. I loved what he said. He echoed my sentiments exactly. And to me, that's what it's about. It is about that lady down the street that's doing the good work, that did miracles in the community, and the community does not know she's the miracle worker. Those are the Black women of today.
Yep, absolutely. Over. Hello.
Hello,
hey, you guys. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right. We got a few more minutes. I'm sorry. Sig, were you finished giving your closing thoughts, or are you still giving
I'm
your
done.
Thoughts? Okay. Jackie, did you finish, or do you want to chime
much,
in?
No, I was pretty much done. You know, it's just that we have to make an effort so that we can make sure that the women who are out there doing amazing things, they kind of get noticed.
whether it's the lady down the street from you or, you know, whether it's a CEO somewhere, you know, and we have to give our young women something to aspire to, something of substance and relevance, you know, and that goes back from the foundation of women from, you know, civil rights and prior to that all the way up to now.
All right. Uli?
I think we're pretty much all on the same page. You know, it's the bigger people that we read about every day in the paper or on TV, we know what they're doing, but it's the little people that count. And so many, many, many black women out here that are doing so much for the community that we don't know about. We should just give them their ups, that's all.
And, you know, what I heard tonight on the show is that instead of looking at TV for the latest celebrity or what they did or did not do or what scandal they're caught in, look at home. Look in your lineage. There are so many women right in our homes and our families that have made so many impact on our family, on our culture, on black society. You know, it may be your mom, maybe your grandmother, it may be your sister, it may be your auntie, it may be the neighbor that lives down the street. And I just, you know, encourage you to reach out because we are the people, the women of impact, not on TV necessarily, but yet we are just as famous, if not more. So that is my closing thought for the night. Ladies, it's been such a great show. I could curl up on the couch with you guys and just chat and talk and talk because as women, we need to talk about this. And we need to put it out there, like, to give some people some ideas. We need to start teaching our kids and not let the TVs and the computers, the games and all that stuff teach them. So, of course, we want to thank our guest, Dr. Sandra Lewis.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have enjoyed your
input.
And you can find out more information about Dr. Lewis by visiting her site at the-livingsource.com. And also thank you to our callers and to listeners. We don't have a show if you don't listen to us. So thank you to everyone that listens and tunes in and has a thought, that likes our Facebook page. We want to remind you that every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. is the Every Woman Talk Show. It's officially Ladies Night every Tuesday night, and also that the Man Up Talk Show is every Friday night at 8 p.m., as well as the Game Strong Sports Talk Show with Trey Davis airs Monday night at 8 p.m., and also we want to remind you, Fashion for Life is a fashion show for cancer awareness. And it's taking place Saturday, February 22nd, this year, 2014, at 12:30 until 6 p.m. Get your tickets. Tickets are $25 for adults and students with ID 18 and under, only $5. Y'all, we got to come out and support. We're talking about building communities tonight and Black History Month. It starts with us supporting. So you can get some information.
Every woman show should definitely be there to support that, all of us that can be there.
Yes. So you can get some information at 973-602-9133. And all the proceeds are not just going in somebody's pockets, but they are actually going to a great cause, the American Cancer Society Relay for Life of Newark. So once again, Dr. Lewis, we appreciate you. Thank you for being a woman of distinction. Thank you for disseminating information.
You.
To my crew on here, Uli, Jackie, and Sick, thank you for being women, you know, above board, women of class, you know, for disseminating information and doing it the way that only you can do it. And on that note, we just want to say goodnight. Who wants to say goodnight to the audience, to the listeners? Anybody? Any volunteers?
Adios.
Want to take us out? Adios.
Adios.
Hey, you got anything you want to say? Goodnight.
Till next time.
Good night, you guys. Time. Thank you so much for being there.
Thank you, and we'll catch you
good
next
night.
Tuesday. Good night, and thank you for listening.
Night, Sid. Good night, Uli. Good night, Craig.
Night,
night,
good night. Good
besides, relationships are for people that are just waiting for something better to come along.
Spoken like a cynic.
I'm not a cynic. I'm a realist.
Who are a realist masquerading as a cynic who is secretly an optimist.
Why are we here? Let's be honest. Why are we here? There
are some clear indications, and then there are some confusing indications. You can be in a relationship with somebody for a really long time, but the connection isn't there anymore, but you're still having sex. And he may just be there just for that, or she may be there just for that, but that connection is what's keeping us together. My job is to try to find the truth.
The truth.
You're in a
Everybody say they want the truth. Everybody say they want real, but they want that shit sugar-coated and dipped in honey with strawberries all lined around it. And I don't own no...
I do agree it's how you deliver it. It really is how you deliver it. If you approach me wrong, I'm not going to receive it. Even when our parents used to yell at us, we shut down. We didn't always receive it because of the way it was delivered.
How do you think a woman should put that to a man? How do you think that a woman should say to a man, this doesn't work for me? Or, you know, I'm not getting what I need from you.
I'm just so excited because tonight is the premiere of the Every Woman Talk Show. I am Natae, one of your co-hosts, and I am joined by a fantastic panel of women this evening. Uli, Signature, and Jackie, we're all sisters with different opinions. So for the next hour, we're going to talk about...
Shadow, 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 Shad